Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long, and we're joined by the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. And Bobby's notebook is brought to you by Rouse's Markets, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Cajun Cannon, great to have you with us. And Cajun, was it another big day from everything I've seen, Spencer Rattler in the offense?
No, that wasn't like yesterday. We couldn't put back-to-back days, but maybe that's good for our defense.
Yeah.
I don't know. They did start off with 7-on-7 in the red zone. The defense won that drill. Blackman comes up with a great pass defense. Other throw could have been a little bit higher, so maybe can't get his hands on it. But I think if he wouldn't have kind of stumbled at the end, he might have ended up getting another interception. But it was a great pass defense to prevent a touchdown. Shuck had a nice throw to Jack Stahl, you know, the tight end. That was precise throw on time. You know, and I think if they would utilize two tight end sets for the first game against the Cardinals right now, to me it would be Juwan Johnson and Jack Stahl, if I just had to guess, any two tight end sets. I mean, how Juwan Johnson is targeted a number of times, no matter who's the quarterback, whether it's, you know, Rattler or Shuck. Mike, if he plays every game, I think he can't help but have like 80-plus catches.
Now, that's a lot of catches, Bob, 80 catches.
But I mean,
that's a lot.
I'm looking at plays where, I mean, like three straight passes. They're running a two-minute drill, like no huddle, hurry up and all. Three straight passes are going to Juwan Johnson.
Oh.
So just look at how they're utilizing him. I would say, obviously, you know, Rashid Shaheed, Chris Olave. And then you throw in Alvin Kamara. But I would say before even Tipton or Brandon Cooks, I would look at Juwan Johnson as far as being utilized by the quarterbacks. Now, they did do this today, and I don't think they're going to show this against the Broncos. Kind of Taysom Hill-type plays, but doing with the running back, like with Alvin Kamara at quarterback. You know, splitting out the quarterback, whether it be Shuck or Rattler at wide receiver, and it wasn't like QB powers. It looked like an RPO, and Alvin looked like a quarterback running it. But he wasn't reading nothing. He was like just riding the running back and hitting and getting it. And I don't know if the defense was prepared for it, but they ran that like a couple of times. And, well, he had one big gain where, well, I don't think the defense was ready for Alvin, a quarterback and running an RPO. Quincy Raleigh continues to impress. You know, you see him coming up with passes defended. I think he was came out of nowhere last year. Rico Payton having a pass defended versus Dante Pettis. But it was kind of, they were doing situational football with, you know, four-minute offense. I think they even had it up to five-minute offense, when you're going to see during the season where we're going to utilize the no huddle. It's not necessarily a hurry-up where we're always on the line, but it might be in spurts where we're in the huddle, then all of a sudden we run three plays not in the huddle, then you get back in the huddle. Now you got to convert your first downs to be able to try and keep, you know, the defense off balance. But
now, Bob, you would do that so the defense couldn't substitute.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to be a game plan and looking if they can have an advantage over a defense. Yeah, keeping them from substituting, maybe not utilizing the people in the game and not having time to substitute, because it's hurry up, but it's like no huddle. And it's not truly like, oh, we got to go score 2 minutes. But I think still, what I've watched throughout training camp, situational football, that is towards the end of the game, whether you need touchdown, field goal. Now, obviously, if you need a touchdown, you'd be going for a Hail Mary if in that type of situation. But we're having, good for our defense, I guess, but we're having to settle too much for field goals. And the kickers were outstanding today. Groupie, I don't know if I've ever witnessed a kicker have a better training camp, whether when I was playing or just covering it. And, Mike, when I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, if I count everything, he's talking about like 40 years. That Groupie, he's missed one kick. He made a 53-yarder today, and he's just steady. I mean, accurate. And Smith made a 50-yard, 8-yard field goal right at the end of practice to, like, win the game, you know, kind of type thing. And it went halfway up the net. I mean, that had been good, like, been good from 68. So a controlled environment, that was a good situation. Probably the play of the day. When probably it was. Now, this is about as good as it gets. It was a pass from Rattler to Olave. I mean, that was the play of the day. It would have been a 22-yard touchdown. And what Olave did a great job, because it wasn't, I think it was Rico Payton in coverage. It wasn't that bad coverage. He was right there. But Olave did a great job of late hands. Like, what I mean by late hands, you don't panic. Yeah. And put his hands up late. Another nice throw and catch. That was about as good as it gets. Seeing Olave, also, they always talk about him. Or Rashid making contested catches. Now, you don't want to ever have, definitely not in a game, that happened to Chris Olave, where the ball hits you in your hands. You know, you playing pitch and catch with your dad or something. Oh, it hits your hands. You got to catch it. Well, it just seems like now and then Rashid Shaheed or Chris Olave, they'll have a drop that it's not because of the defense, just maybe getting lackadaisical, lack of concentration. You have to be able to, come up with the ball and basically catch it, because that's a drive killer. We all know that's what happened with Shuck and Chris Olave, where who knows if he catches it, he might have scored instead of just being, 23-24-yard gain. Now, as far as getting after the quarterback, they did one stunt. And I don't know, Shuck got to have more pocket awareness. Maybe that might come with time. I don't know, Pete Werner ran by him, and I said, well, Shuck had to see him. He was like 2-3 steps past him. I said, he got killed. So that pocket awareness, I put a big question mark. He has to be able to see that with Pete Werner coming free. Again, Carl Granderson having a sack. Chase Young, having a sack. So, you see the guys who you expected to make plays coming up with the big defensive plays or offensive plays. But again, looking at Alante Taylor, I don't know, ask Coach, if he's not available for that star position, who he's going to utilize. So he ended up naming the whole secondary. I mean, I don't know. He said, Ugo and all, how he don't give you anything. Because, they're counting on Alante Taylor. I just was basically saying, if he can't play, who's that, second guy to be that star at nickel in the slot? So he gave a coach's answer. And when I give it, it'd be interesting to see when he's going to name a starting quarterback. We tried to ask him, is it case in point game week or to me, you can't necessarily do it right for the kickoff because the Cardinals will know. But you could maybe they could practice for both quarterbacks and maybe you don't reveal that by Wednesday.
Bob, I think knows who it is.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
just not saying it.
Right.
I think he knows who it is.
Well, and I think, and I brought this up too, the players know who it is.
Yes.
Because they all watch the film. And to me, I don't know everything, but I would think based on performance and just his swagger and because he hasn't won a game, but he has NFL experience, would be Spencer Rattler right now. And I think, like I said, we talked about this. They're both eventually, I think, going to play this season. And, it'd be Rattler's job to lose just because he throws a pick or something. They're not just going to, Charlize, you're going to take him out of the game. No, whoever he goes with, Coach Moore said that, no, that's our quarterback. It's not like they'd have to be looking over their shoulder. They're going to get replaced. So you're going to have so let's say Rattler does start. He's going to have an opportunity to start a number of games. And whether that's a month and a half, 5-6 games, whatever it might be. And then eventually, I think, they'd make a change. And if they go with Shuck, it'd be the same thing. They're not going to have both quarterbacks play in the same game. Like a relief pitcher in baseball, they're not going to do that. Or they're not going to say, okay, Rattler, you starting this week. And then, Shuck starting. But like that. And it won't be like what happened to Haener. Remember when Haener played
right.
first half and he got yanked at halftime?
Now, I don't think you're going to see that.
No.
If Rattler gets the call and
they're going to give him a chance,
we had talked about before. If you watched the Patriots last year, okay, Drake May didn't start the season. He came in later.
He came in for the Texans game. I want to say at the top of my head that was game 6. Jacoby Brissett.
Yep.
Who's now with the Cardinals, who will be backing up Kyler Murray more than likely. And, Clayton Tune, fighting to stay on that roster, the number 3 quarterback right now, it looks like. But, yeah, I think whoever's starting game one against the Cardinals, they'll have a chance. They'll have an opportunity to be successful. And I would say opportunity usually means a handful of games. So it's a handful, let's say half a dozen, you know, five, six games, and see where you're at. But, yeah, it was a good practice in the Dome. And Coach Moore says the more we can get in the Dome done and get used to being in that environment, you know, because the lighting and all that, the better. So it's going to be a great test. And I'll talk about more of this in the show with the Broncos. You know the one thing why Sean Payton's team won last year, Michael? Look at, well, they're 10-7. I'm looking defense. At the defense, number seven overall defense, with three against the run. But this is where they were. And you can't help but win in the NFL. If you had top 10 scoring offense and top 10 scoring defense, you're going to win. I didn't realize because, you know, their offense was like ranked 19th, but they averaged 25 points a game. You know, defense could be a big part of that, but they only gave up 18 points a game, which was third best. So, well,
just think if they had a running game.
Yeah.
They didn't have last year. Well, no running game.
And they would try to address that in the draft, Mike. You know,
with R.J. Harvey, yeah.
Yep. So we'll have to see how that comes about. But I think it's a good team to play against. The last game, I understand, like, Bo Nix aren't a starter. Sean said they're playing like 8, 9, 10 reps. You know, so they have one drive. So if they go 3 and out, they're going to be back out there. So I think it's a good team to play to get ready for the regular season, that being the Broncos, because with their expectations.
That's Bobby Hebert's Odyssey Sports Training Camp coverage is brought to you by GEICO. Switch and save. Get more with GEICO. We have more from Bobby's Notebook right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Bobby's Notebook is brought to you by Rouse's Market, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Bob, you brought up Alante Taylor.
Oh.
Before we talk a little bit about Alante,
He doesn't look hurt to me. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so we'll get back to that. But I don't know if it's every day, but basically every other day, you're brought up about Julian Blackman. And it reminds me of when they signed him. I talked to Rick Venturi, who does the color. He's the color analyst for the Colts. And he was like, Mike, one of the things I'm going to tell you about Blackman, he practices like he plays. And he said, listen, in today's world, there's not a lot of veterans do that. He gives you everything he's got in practice, and he plays, basically practice and he plays. He said you can't tell the difference.
Well, I can tell you right now, and I don't think because he's a veteran, I don't think it's just in training camp. I'd be so much surprised if he doesn't lead the team in interceptions. You know, look, everybody's got an opportunity. Can you make a play on the ball? But, Mike, you know, when you go three or four straight days in a training camp practice and you come up with an interception, no, that doesn't happen that often. He just has a nose for the football and he catches the ball well. So I could see him not only leading in training camp, but when all said and done at the end of the season, hopefully that's the case, he'll have, you know, five or six or half a dozen interceptions because, you know, you got to win that turnover margin and be on that plus side. And the leader in the back end of the secondary, and I asked Coach Moore this, and we count on is Alante Taylor.
Yep.
And, you know, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And that's what I was asking Coach Moore. If Alante Taylor can't play, who's that guy? And he kind of gave a generic thing. Oh, we got a lot of different guys. Okay, whatever. And it was a coach answer. But, okay.
And you saw him running today.
Okay, this is the thing. I'm going to the post presser, you know, when you talk to the coach. Who comes to the podium, when the players, but we talking to Coach Moore, and before we got there, I see this guy just running by me in street clothes. I said, man, that's Alante Taylor. I said, doesn't he have a pull groin? They look like he had no damn pull groin to me. I mean, you can't run like that. Oh, well, but they might say, well, Bobby, it's a slight pull groin. Still, you wouldn't be running like that. And Jeff Nowak had brought this up. Now, I don't know. Saints might get mad at me to say this. But I don't know. Mike, that's a new thing. Is he having now? He came to camp, and maybe you start talking contract behind the scene. Is it a hold-in? Hmm. And he wants some, hey, what about my payday? I want some. And so I could speculate. The fans want to know this kind of thing. But we need Alante Taylor. And well, Mike, all I know is, okay, injury report, and they don't have to give an injury report. Oh, he's dealing with a groin injury. I just know people who dealt with groin injuries all through the years, football players, they're not running like that. And I just saw him and I said, well, and then you know, I remember when Jeff was talking about that, like, oh, I think he's kind of mad right now because he doesn't have a new contract that he wanted. I don't know what the Saints told him behind the scenes. Yeah, come to camp, we're going to work something out. And then maybe it's not to his liking or whatever. But I think they're trying to pull the wool over our eye when they said, oh, it's a groin injury. I never seen no one with a groin injury run like that to get to the locker room after practice in street clothes.
Yeah, and he's such a key piece, and he knows it.
Yeah, I think
he knows it.
It's all about leverage and yep. trying to use that leverage. Yeah, Mike, exactly. He knows how much they're counting on him.
And when you play that slot inside position, and then you got to guard the other team's top receiver on third down, they've handed you the baton. Hey, you the guy. You're the guy in the secondary.
Well, yeah, but if he's the guy, you got to play.
I get it. You know. But he might say, hey, you know, hey, pay me like the guy, too.
Right?
Contract is gone.
Yeah, that exactly.
All right. That was Bobby Hebert's Notebook, brought to you by Odyssey Sports Training Camp Coverage. And it is brought to you by GEICO. Switch and save. Get more with GEICO. When we come back, Donnie Druin will join us. He covers the Arizona Cardinals for Sports Illustrated. We'll get his take on the Cardinals right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and we'll go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. He covers the Arizona Cardinals for Sports Illustrated, Donnie Druin. Donnie, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Doing great. Donnie, first question I got to ask you, I saw him kick ass and take names last year in the SEC, and that's Walter Nolan. Man. When he wanted to, he flipped that dial, and, man, he was something to have to deal with. I'd watched him at A&M, and he was a good player there. Last year at Ole Miss, man, ain't nobody blocking him one-on-one. How has he looked in training camp?
Yeah, so he actually hasn't participated in training camp just yet.
Before the
first day of training camp, head coach Jonathan Gannon told reporters that he suffered a calf injury training at the team facility beforehand, and he is yet – to participate in the training camp practice, and that's been one of the major storylines actually around here. Walter Nolan, first-round pick for the Cardinals, hasn't been spotted at training camp at all participating. He's been with the team, he's been in the meetings, he's impressed in that end, but we've yet to see him on the field, and we're starting to get a little bit of a sense that he could miss week one in New Orleans, but nobody's really sure about him.
Now, Donnie, how much pressure is Kyler Murray on there? And what I mean by that, you know, is it the hot seat, whatever? Look, he's going now, entering what, his 7th year on the job, and his inconsistency has been on the back half of the season. You know, when you watch him play, because he is very entertaining, explosive, and then you look at the connection between him and Marvin Harrison Jr. was kind of hit and miss last year. Now, they still produce, 8 scores, but what's your take on that relationship, and is that going to grow from the get-go, and can Kyler Murray really excel at a high level the whole season? And then, you know, obviously you always want to get to the postseason. But is it like, because what they've guaranteed him, is it like, okay, Kyler Murray, we need you to really do something this year for the Cardinals or what?
Yeah, it certainly feels like that. I think just because we've seen the talent that Kyler Murray can have, former number one overall pick, former Heisman Trophy winner. He's gotten them to the playoffs before, but that was back in 2021. You see the upside with him. He's a guy who has really great arm talent, very athletic. The upside is certainly there, but like you pointed out, the consistency really isn't. And the line between good and great is very, very thin. The great ones are able to be consistent at a high level over and over again, and that's just not something that Kyler Murray has done to this point in his career. But now the Cardinals have loaded up the defensive side of the ball this offseason, getting guys like Josh Sweat, Calais Campbell, Dalvin Tomlinson in free agency, and spending 6 or 7 draft picks on the defensive side of the ball to hopefully balance things out to where Kyler doesn't feel like he has to play that quote-unquote superhero ball week in and week out. And playing under offensive coordinator Drew Petzing, it'll be his 2nd full season playing under that, so there's hope a little bit of that continuity can carry over. And you talk about Marvin Harrison Jr., a little bit of a disappointing season, I think, with a lot of people's expectations of him being a number 4 overall pick. But like you said, 885 yards, 8 touchdowns last year. I tell you what, he looked damn good in training camp. He's catching a whole lot. He's bulked up, added about 15 pounds of muscle to his frame from year one to year two. So it looks like he's ready to take that sophomore surge. I do think that connection between Kyler and Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be better. How much better will it be? Will it be enough to get the Cardinals offense hit that good to great level to get them to the postseason? Nobody really knows, but they can run the football, and if Kyler Murray can stay consistent and not do too much and basically not lose them games, I think that's ultimately what they need Kyler Murray to be, is a game manager with the athletic upside to make plays whenever needed. So I think when you look at the hot seat, I don't necessarily think it's fair to say Kyler's on the hot seat, but it's basically put up or shut up time here in the desert. If they don't make the postseason, I'm not sure if Kyler Murray's the first that's going to be gone. I think Drew Petzing might be the first off the chopping block, because heading into year three under Jonathan Gannon, he had the division lead last year, 6-4, heading to the bye week. You go 2-5 down the stretch of the regular season. If that happens again, something's got to change. I'm just not sure if it's going to be Kyler named first, being drawn out of that hat.
Now, Donnie, the one thing, and Kyler Murray is a big part of this, you know, he can run the football. He averaged like 7.5 yards a run, almost 600 yards rushing. But does he get enough respect, the running back Connor? I was saying he's a 1,000-yard rusher, and boy, and you look, well, 1,000 yards, well, you play 17 games, but averaging 4.6 yards a carry, that's just impressive. And then I look at each of the past two seasons, the Cardinals have finished, around no worse than 6 in rushing. So it's like, even though you got Marvin Harrison Jr. And they're getting the defense better, that I don't think they're changing as far as not wanting to run the football. It just seems like that's their swagger, like, hey, we're going to punch in the mouth. We want to run the ball.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and we have to remember that offensive coordinator Drew Petzing comes from that Kevin Stefanski coaching tree. So you know they're going to run the ball 30, 35 times a game. And everybody's very excited about James Conner. I agree. I don't think he gets a lot of the national respect that he should. But everybody's also excited about second-year running back Trey Benson, the Florida State kid, the second running back taken in last year's draft, 2024. It took him a little bit to get going last year, but he put some really good things on film. He's managed to impress this offseason. We've heard coaches and teammates say that the Cardinals basically have two starting running backs between James Conner and Trey Benson, too. So they're very excited about that. But undoubtedly, they're going to run the football. They're going to stay true to their identity. And there's a lot of talk about Marvin Harrison Jr., but Trey McBride is one of the NFL's best tight ends, and he seems to be basically uncomfortable right on a week-to-week basis. So that's another layer that defenses have to worry about over the course of four quarters.
Now, Donnie, I think all teams here in New Orleans also, we look in the trenches. Are you winning on the offensive defensive line? And we had mentioned, you mentioned how they addressed the defense. Busy offseason, adding, top-notch talent to the defensive line and edge rusher. Do you think when all said and done, was that what the Cardinals fan base wanted? And what's your first impression? Because the season's going to be here before you know it. Do you think that was the right move, and they have that much of an impact?
I do. I do think that was the right move. I was pretty critical of them not addressing the receiver position over the offseason. They really didn't make any personnel changes on that side of the ball. They replaced starting right guard Will Hernandez in free agency with second-year guy Isaiah Adams. They ended up re-signing Will Hernandez to be a backup while he rehabs from a torn ACL. And then whenever he gets healthy, we'll kind of see from there. But they're pretty confident and their offensive line, but the defensive line. I remember the first day of pads, whenever they was come on in training camp, they dominated. The Cardinals offense could not do anything on a consistent basis time and time again. That's been the case against the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos, at least whenever the starters were out there. Backups, a little bit of a different story, but that kind of is what it is whenever you head into the regular season, right? So it looks to be the right move, and for as much talk about the trenches and what they've done at both defensive tackle and outside linebacker, getting Will Johnson in the second round, he's had two holding penalties called on him in preseason, but from the little that we've seen, he looks every little bit as one of the top cornerback prospects that was in the draft. And as long as that knee can stay healthy and hold up over the course of a few seasons, the Cardinals definitely feel like they got one of the better prospects in the draft in him.
Yeah, Donnie, shame on me for not really from the get-go recognizing the impact that Trey McBride. So again, whenever he hit that century mark, 111 receptions, right at 1,150 yards. Now, 10.5-yard average, but, boy, talk about a security blanket for a quarterback, and I'm sure he's going to bring that to the table again. And then what about, because, when you watch the Super Bowl and all that, and who's a key addition, like Josh Sweat. I'm looking, obviously coming off a huge game in the Eagles Super Bowl, the pass rushing ability. What have you seen in Josh Sweat and obviously taking advantage of winning the Super Bowl with the Eagles and get that payday?
Yeah, I mean, getting Patty Mahomes down 2.5 times during the biggest game in the world would definitely get you a paycheck, right? So, no, he's been really great. And I think the big advantage here is that previously in Philadelphia, he worked with both head coach Jonathan Gannon and defensive coordinator Nick Rallis. He had his most productive year under those two. I believe he had 11 sacks whenever Gannon and Rallis were there with him with the Eagles. And there's hope that that can kind of transfer from Philadelphia to the desert out here in 2025. He has not played in preseason just yet, so we haven't seen him in live action, but so far so good whenever it comes to the Sweaty Jays, everybody likes to call him out here. Not quite a game record. He's not the best pass rusher in the league. I don't think it's really fair to put those expectations on him, but the Cardinals needed a number one bona fide pass rusher, and they believe they got that in Josh Sweat. And from my eyes, just watching him at training camp, it looks good, but I think we still have to wait to see him against guys not wearing the same color jerseys as him and a quarterback he can actually touch outside of Kyler Murray in practice.
Donnie, I'm a big fan of, who also is a seasoned veteran, a man's man, a pro's pro, Calais Campbell. Boy, whenever he shows up, he's like almost like E.F. Hutton. When he says something, I know people listen. What about him and his involvement, like rotation with that D-line?
Yeah, so he's definitely going to be a starter whenever his name pops up on the box score. He's going to get the registered start. But I think one thing everybody's going to see week one in New Orleans is that the Cardinals do rotate their front seven very, very heavily. There's going to be plenty of guys to get double-digit snaps over the course of that game. So while Calais Campbell is going to be part of the game plan, he's going to be a big presence in that room. I do not expect him to play every single down. He's not that.
He's old.
Is what, 17, 18
years? 18 years, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I think more than anything, he's still shown the ability to produce and that he's still got a little bit gas left in the tank whenever he wants to. And he tries to pull off the old man jog, maybe kind of go through the motion to overcome the drills. But team activities get going, 11-on-11 ball gets going, and all of a sudden he kind of finds a fountain of youth. So I think the Cardinals got the best of both worlds with him, because they got the production. But then you also have a very young defensive line room. Guys like Walter Nolan, this year's first-round pick, Darius Robinson, last year's first-round pick, Dante Stills, who led them in sacks a couple years ago. It's a very young room, and they're hoping he can kind of mold those guys while also produce for them at the same level.
Donnie, one of the guys, and when he came out, scouted him in Paris Johnson Jr., the left tackle. And I always thought, he's so athletic, and he was a big man. He just sort of crushed people in front of him. But he has become such a good technician. And that's the jumps out for me in watching tape of him from last year, especially late. He really understands how to play the tackle position today. I'm not sure that was the case when he first got there. A little bit about Paris Johnson Jr., because I think if he can stay healthy, he's got a chance to be one of the elite left tackles in pro football.
Oh, absolutely. And a fun fact, guys, this will be his second year starting at left tackle for the Cardinals. Started at right tackle his rookie year. They moved him to the left side last year. This will be the first time he's starting at the same position since, I believe, high school, because Ohio State moved him around a little bit as well. And it's such a big advantage for a guy like that to not only be as talented and athletic as he is, but to also carry the mental side of the game, too. I think you put it perfectly. He's a technician. And to quote the great Jonathan Gannon early this training camp, we asked him, what's the ceiling of Paris Johnson Jr.? And he says, Mars. And I think that's just a perfect kind of encapsulation of not only their expectations for him, but what he can actually be. It's going to be a very big year for Paris. He's shown he can block the best of the best at both sides. And that continuity, staying on the left side, protecting Kyler Murray's blind side, I think the Cardinals are in very good hands for the future.
Buda Baker, I mean, you know, because for a lot of people, when you think about the Cardinals, his name comes to mind real quickly. And you look at him, he's like, man, he reminds a little bit of Honey Badger. How could that little guy make all those plays? Man, you talk about a playmaker in the secondary. Well, it's Buda Baker.
And Donnie, we talk about Buda Baker. Even when the Cardinals weren't winning, it seems like he's always winning.
Oh, yeah, Buda Baker, he's a guy who he's going to lay it a la on the field, and there's so much respect for him locally and nationally as well. I mean, we're talking about a guy who fractured his shoulder on one of the first plays of the game a couple years ago and finished the game before he even had his shoulder looked at. And I think he's the personification of a tough player. He plays with so much heart and fire and desire. He does everything well, and he's such a great guy.
Donnie, thanks so much for joining us. Hey, looks like there's a lot of hope out in Arizona, and I do know one thing about the Cardinals. They play hard for their coach. They didn't win a ton of games late, but they play hard for Coach Gannon.
Yeah, you better pack a lunch when you're playing the Cardinals. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they love Gannon. The Cardinals have prioritized getting good, high-quality people in that locker room, and Gannon has those guys bought in, so...
Donnie, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
Much appreciated, guys. Take care.
All right, Donnie.
All right. Donnie Drouin, who covers the Arizona Cardinals for Sports Illustrated, will be back to finish it up here in hour number two right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. That's it for hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia, Charlie Long, the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Bobby will have a lot more from Bobby's notebook when he rejoins us after 6 o'clock along with Steve Geller. We're going to go to news here on the Big 870 WWL.